Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, good evening, ladies. It is good to see you all here. It is really a Kiddush Hashem, a true sanctification of Hashem's name.
Amen.
We're here, and thank God our numbers are growing. It really is a beautiful thing. I mentioned this early on. This is a sefer on Hilchos Muksa, which I learned when it came out in the 80s. I remember in yeshiva, this was one of the siddur and one of the set times of learning. My chavrusim, I went through the sefer, and this is really where I learned Muksa initially, and then later on yeshiva from the sources, from the Gemaras. But if anyone's interested in, there's several books now. This was the first one that I know of in English by Bodner from Lakewood. So there's an art scroll, I'm sure there's more. If you're interested in further study and deeper study in the topic of Muksa, this is an excellent work. We have it here in the Beis Medrash. I have a copy at home. You're welcome to borrow. Just want to mention that we have those types of books in English today. They're really amazing stuff. Okay, so before we get to halacha itself, I want to mention, as I'll try and do on a somewhat regular basis, a hashkafa, a perspective on halacha and our observance of it. And if you simply look at the very, very beginning of the story, you look at Bereishis, you see that Adam and Chava are put in the Garden of Eden, and they are immediately given a restriction. We all know, since we're very little, that they're told not to eat from the tree of knowledge, Eitz Hadas. And it is very telling, I think, because that really, truly is what makes up a human being. A person is an entity, a being, which has restrictions, which has parameters, which has boundaries. Animals, of course, don't. Animals do whatever they're programmed to do, and that's what they do. The distinction, aside from creativity and communication and all the other God-given special, unique qualities that a human being has, those are given to us. Those are resources that we use, thank God, that we have, that we're blessed with. But if you think about it, what really, truly makes us different, what really, truly makes us human, forget about even Jewish and the special, the chosen people, is the fact that we have boundaries, that this is okay and this is not okay. And therefore, when we learn more halacha, and we sometimes feel like, now I know more and my hands are being tied, we should understand and appreciate that's exactly right. Hashem wants us to understand in our journey through life that being human means that you are... Yeah. That you are... Thank you. That you are... That there's boundaries. That there's structure. There's boundaries. There's a line beyond which a human being is not supposed to go. And certainly a Jew with 613 mitzvot is not supposed to go. So we should really celebrate that restriction as we're struggling with it and as we're trying to wiggle out of it sometimes. But we should truly celebrate the fact we have those. And that is what distinguishes us from the cat and the dog and the animal kingdom. Moreover, I want to share with you ladies a thought which I think is very, very, very basic and very important. And that is, if you ask the average person what was the first commandment given to mankind, it would be just that. It would be, don't eat from the tree of knowledge. The Meshech Chachma of Dvinsk, 100 and some odd years ago, points out that that's a mistake. The truth is that the first commandment given in our Torah to mankind is, from everything in the garden, you should surely eat. Adam and Chava, the first couple, were told that they are supposed to eat from the plenty of the garden of Gan Eden. And they made, on some level, the same mistake that we do. They saw it as permission to enjoy everything in the world. They didn't fully appreciate and understand that it was a mitzvah. It was a mitzvah to enjoy everything in the world. The Meshech Chachma explains that if they had appreciated the first commandment as a commandment, that I want you, God says, to enjoy everything in the garden, and they appreciated it and they enjoyed it and they really got something out of that experience, and eating from everything that they had, and really appreciating and the colors and everything else that the Garden of Eden represented, if they really got it, if they really, really, really appreciated and took it all in, they would have never sinned. It's because they saw it as permission and not as a mitzvah, they didn't enjoy it as much. They didn't get the pleasure out of the garden that they should have, which then said, oh, that one tree over there in the middle is forbidden. We all know what happens when you tell someone, don't touch, don't look, don't this, don't that. That's exactly where we go. So the Torah here is telling us there's boundaries. A human being is defined by boundaries, by parameters. But at the same time, the 98% of the world that we're supposed to enjoy is exactly that. We're supposed to enjoy it. It's not just okay. It's not just parv. It's not just permission granted. It's Hashem wants us to enjoy that. And that allows us to stay away from those few things that we're not supposed to engage in. We're not supposed to derive pleasure from for whatever reason at that time, in that situation. That allows us, it fortifies us to be able to do that. So again, I think that's an important worldview, it's an important hashgafa in looking at halacha in general, in Hilchos Shabbos, as we're studying in particular, to appreciate and to understand that Shabbos is truly different. Shabbos is truly holy. Shabbos is truly pleasurable because we're supposed to focus on the pleasure of Shabbos and the relationships and the food and the camaraderie and everything else that Shabbos represents. And not hyper-focus on the restrictions, as I know I did as a young boy growing up and had a religious friends and I was not yet there, and I saw Shabbos as the big bad day of no, you couldn't do anything, and I couldn't call them, and we couldn't go to the mall, we couldn't go to the movies. That's a mistake. That's a mistake. To view it in that light is simply wrong. When a person, and I think we all have had this experience, it's hard sometimes to articulate this to someone who hasn't seen it, someone who hasn't been there and experienced it. But experiencing that pleasure is what allows us the strength and the fortitude to say, that might be something I would enjoy, but it's off limits to me, and that's okay. It's just a thought going into my next level of understanding of Hilchos Shabbos. Okay, so as I mentioned last time, I want to open the floor to questions before we move on. So in last class, ladies, we talked about the fundamentals of muktzah, we talked about the definition, we talked about the general rule of muktzah, which is if you can't use it, you can't move it, which is a little overly broad, but it's definitely true. We talked about the reasons, the two main reasons for muktzah. We talked about a kli versus a non-kli. And then we got into the foundation of all of muktzah, which is the three categories of muktzah. And just to review those briefly, we said, and we'll refer to them throughout the next couple of classes, as A, B, and C. The Gemara gives them different labels and different definitions, but we'll simply use A, B, and C. I also wanted to mention, before I forget, the back of the picture book, Rabbi Chase picture book, that book I mentioned last week. At the very end, he talks about muktzah. It looks like an apartment building, really very cute. So he terms it as six categories of muktzah. And some models have it, I think he has it as seven categories of muktzah. All of these are true. All of these are true. The Gemara gives more specific labels and subcategories, but the general categories and the halacha really flows in three different directions, which is why I've rolled it down to A, B, and C. And I remember a couple of years ago, when I was teaching at Tamima, so we decided to call several different teachers in New York and in Baltimore, Beis Yaakov Rebbeim, and ask them about their curriculum and what they're teaching, and maybe we should make some changes. So I remember speaking to a Rav in New York, whose name I do not remember, and he said he teaches muktzah, and he feels there's only one way to teach it. And I said, what's that? And he said, three categories. And I said, oh, that's very nice to hear, because that's also how we do it. How we do it here. I mean, he actually starts with three and then branches out to the seven. So my point in saying all this is that if you do notice in that book or any other safer for that matter, a longer list, it's not that we're arguing. It's not that there's any disagreement here. It's simply semantics. It's simply the Gemara gives it more labels and therefore you can come up with a longer, much longer list. Okay, so category A was not muktzah at all. We said they had to be kalim, books, tables, chairs, etc. They're designed for permissible Shabbos use. which is really all the things that you and I interact with on a regular basis on Shabbos. B is things that are kelim, but they are now designed for a non-permissible Shabbos use, but you're willing to use them for a permissible use. And our example was a hammer. If you're willing to use that as a doorstop, you're willing to use it as a nutcracker. A pen is a good example if you're willing to use it as a back scratcher or for other purposes. Many examples of category B. And then category C, we said, are either non-kalim, so sticks and stones, all that kind of stuff, or they are in fact kalim, but they are designed for a non-permissible Shabbos use, and you're not willing to use them for a permissible Shabbos use. So a cell phone would be a good example very often of category C, expensive electronics. Again, the Gemara's example was a knife that's used for shechita, for slaughtering an animal. These are types of things which are designed for non-permissible Shabbos use, and you're very particular about them. You're not going to use them willy-nilly for whatever you want. You're going to be very protective of them. They stay up on the shelf, and that's where they stay. That would be category C. We said A is you can move whenever you want, really. Category B, you can move in very limited circumstances if you need them for something else or if you need the space. And then category C, we said, are really off limits. We'll see some exceptions to that. But basically, category C are things that you're not allowed to move. They're just off limits on Shabbos. Okay, so that's just a little review from last time. If you turn the page, page 2, the item number 5, it's all about me, the owner calls the shots. What we mean here is that which category a particular item falls into ultimately is decided upon by the owner of the item. You and I, as the owner of this item, get to decide what category this thing is. So that there might be a norm, there might be, we've thrown some examples out there which might be typically true, but if you, as the owner of that item, use it for something else, that item's status changes. So, for example, one of the most salient examples for me, when I was in yeshiva, there was a boulder, there was a rock, that was used as the doorstop into the dining room. We come down from the Beis Medrash, hungry bunch of boys, and the door was propped open by this big rock. So a rock, normally, is a category C. Rocks outside, all over, whatever. Category C, they're not designated for any particular purpose. That's a category C, the non-kalim. Until you use it. And we'll talk about the specifics of how to move things from one category to another. But once you, as the owner, in this case, it was ownerless, and someone decided, hey, that would work really well here. Once you use it, designate it somehow for a permissible Shabbos use, it changes its category. So you as the owner have the right to do that really to any of your objects. Your cell phone, for example, it's in years since you've used it, it's now a toy, it's now whatever. So that could very easily go from being a C to being a B or being an A, even, depending on what you use it for. An old laptop, there's a long list of things that one could conceivably say move. They move categories because of you, the owner. Okay, so there's a lot of details to that we'll get to in a moment. But the main point here is it's all about me. Me, the owner, gets to choose what category this thing is in. Now, 6 is changing from one category to another. Generally speaking, this change of its designation, its being assigned to a particular category, must be done before Shabbos. It must be assigned before Shabbos. Because of the rule of migu, that first word there, A, 6A, is migu. Again, in the Hebrew, it's mem, yud, gimel, vav. Mem, yud, gimel, vav is migu. Migu is part of a phrase in the Gemara, which means whatever status it had during sunset is the status that it keeps the rest of Shabbos. Migu means whatever status an object, an item has during, at sunset Friday afternoon, is the status that it will keep the rest of Shabbos. so that, generally speaking, we'll see there's an exception, but generally speaking, an object cannot change its status on Shabbos. Generally speaking, that rule is true. Whatever status it had, whatever category it finds itself on sunset Friday afternoon, is the status that it will retain the entire Shabbos. That's the concept of Migu. Okay, the view of this, ladies, is that the category that it finds itself in really only needs to be designated mentally. One does not need to necessarily, like the rock example I gave before, you don't necessarily need to go over to it and say a bracha on it or anything. You know, it's not necessary. If that rock was in, we don't mean rocks. We mean if that rock, you saw that rock Thursday night, I don't know, say, hey, that would make a great doorstop. And then Friday night or Shabbos afternoon, you take the rock and put it as a doorstop, that's perfectly fine. Because you decided before Shabbos started that that rock is no longer a rock. That rock now is really a doorstop. So as long as you designate something mentally before Shabbos starts, you have changed its category. You've changed its status. Both ways, whether, you know, stricter or less strict. As long as you, and again, you don't have to sit and shuckle or say any incantations or anything. As long as you have that decision, and you know, you've made that decision, then that object, and of course, you assume you've got rights to that, to make that decision, that object now changes its designation. One point I want to make, the girls always ask, and that is, can you go back and forth? And the answer is, no. You can't just, you know, one day it's this, and one day it's that. You can't, we'll talk about things which have multiple purposes, but no, the goal here is not, you know, the halacha doesn't want us playing games with, is this muksa, is it not muksa? If it's honestly used for a doorstop, it's a doorstop. It's no longer muksa. If it's honestly a rock, then it's a rock. Yes, ma'am.
So let's say ahead of Shabbos you see this, that would make a good doorstop, but you don't take it then and use it. You just think about it.
Right.
So then on Shabbos you go, I need to hold this door open, I'm going to go get that rock.
Mm-hmm.
What if you go get another rock?
Mm-mm.
You can't do that.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. It has to be that rock. Yes, ma'am.
Are there items that cannot be used in this category? Are there items, let's say you have centerpieces that you have pennies inside, you designate them as pebbles?
Yeah, that's fine. You can... person can reassign basically anything. Money, I mean, really anything.
Your car,
yeah. We'll get into... that was the designating mentally really works if it really works, meaning this rock is now a doorstop. Not always used, but it's now a designated doorstop. Well, you can't say, you know, I don't know, a $5 bill is a, what do you call it, is a bookmark, and then, you know, Sunday morning go spend it at Kroger. That doesn't, you know, no, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. If those pennies become a decorative piece, they're now pebbles, they're now shiny, you know, they're not pennies anymore. Halachically, they don't look at it as money, we look at it as decorative.
And they don't change.
And as long, yeah, again, you can't go back and forth every day, but as long, if you've moved it from being a penny to being a decorative piece, it's now a decorative piece. Yeah.
And you don't have to follow through with what you decide. Actually.
No.
So if you say you're going to, that could be a good doorstop, you don't have to.
No. No, there's no requirement to. Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
What about a woman cut some meat from my garden for my headache?
So that's a good question. That would get into other areas. That's the malacha, actually, the second malacha of Kotzer, which is uprooting things. So that would be prohibited because it's still attached to the ground. If it was detached from the ground, it would be A anyway. Like an apple falls from the tree, you see it Tuesday night, you see it Thursday night, whatever. That apple is not muksa. Whereas an apple on a tree is muksa because it's part of the tree, and you can't, for other reasons, you can't separate it. You can't take the apple from the tree. Right. But if the mint's attached to the ground, though, on Shabbos, when Shabbos starts, it's... Yeah, you can't separate it. You can certainly, yes, Friday afternoon, you're welcome to, you know, you cut it then, and it becomes. Okay, so let's go a little further. See if this is, ladies, typical use. So typical use, similar in a certain sense to be, and that is if the object has more than one use, The object has more than one use. We look at its typical use. We look at its, it's hard to say, majority use, even though that's the language in the Sfarim, but we look at its typical use. So, for again, going back to the hammer, which is not a very practical example, but at least it's illustrative. If you have a hammer and you use it most of the time for nails and some of the time for walnuts, it's still going to be muksa. It's still going to be category B muksa because we look at the typical use of that item. Whereas if it's the opposite, you for some reason like to use hammers as nutcrackers. Once in a while you can't find your regular hammer or you use it for nails, that hammer is no longer a hammer. It looks like a hammer, it feels like a hammer, it smells like, but it's not a hammer. It really is a nutcracker, and therefore it would be category A. It's moved, but based on your usage, which is really your mental designation as well, you've moved that hammer from being a hammer, which is a category B and muksa, to being a nutcracker in category A and not being muksa. Sometimes it's obviously very difficult to know. Sometimes it is hard to know what is, you know, what is what. At the same time, you know, thank God we're spoiled Americans and we have a specific tool for just about everything. So maybe it's not so hard to know. Most things have their specific purpose and that's all we generally use them for. But certainly, in theory at least, if something has multiple purposes, you try and ask yourself honestly, what is its main purpose? And that would tell you which category it finds itself in. Okay, now maybe the most important piece of this, of item 6, is D, which is status set to change on Shabbos. This is very important. Because if you think about it, chalent should be muksa, which would really ruin Shabbos. Chalent, I would not get a minion, a steam minion, as a chalent was not edible. Chalent should be muksa, because if you're like most people, you put up your chalent not that long before Shabbos starts. So that when sunset hits, it's raw, it's not edible, it's gross, and therefore it should be muksa, based on the rule of migu, which we started this little discussion off with, it should be muksa. And the reason it is not, and we all enjoy chalent every Shabbos afternoon, is because you've already set it up to change. It's not just willy-nilly, something might happen, you know, it's just an object and it might change its, you know, something might happen to it later, something might not. That's the normative case of migu. Whatever status it has now, it has the rest of Shabbos. If something comes along and changes its status, we say still muksa. But that's with the exception of things that were set up by you, set up by a person, to change. Anything which is set up to change does not remain muksa. The status that it had sunset does not stay with it. It does change into being an edible, delicious food. Or you hang up, this gets into a whole other arena, but I guess all of muksa gets into other malachos, you hang up something to dry. You have a soaking wet towel, and you hang it up to dry Friday afternoon. So soaking wet towel, well, towel you will not, I'm not talking about the towel in the bathroom that's a little wet. I'm talking about, you know, it comes out of the wash. No one would use it. It's gross. It's just icky. So that towel is muksa. Until it dries, that towel is muksa. So if you hang that towel up Friday afternoon to dry, when it dries, let's say Shabbos morning, you realize it's now dry, it is not muksa. Because even though at sunset it was still wet, and therefore theoretically muksa, but since you, a person, set it up to change its status, you hung it up to dry, which means give it X number of hours, it will be usable on Shabbos, it becomes unmuksa, so to speak. So that, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night, it's wet and muksa. 8 o'clock in the morning, it's dry and not muksa. So the rule of migu, A, 6A, has this exception, 6D, which is if you, a human being, a person, just sets something up to change its status, even into Shabbos, its status does, in fact, change. Yes, ma'am.
Now, your example of chalent not being cooked by the time Shabbos starts, wouldn't that mean that you could cook into Shabbos? And I thought everything had to be done before.
Okay, thank you for asking. That's a great question. Many, many people have this, struggle with this issue. The short answer, we'll get there more in depth, but the short answer is that as long as you or I if the action is done before Shabbos, then the result that comes on Shabbos is fine, is irrelevant. It's really totally fine. That's true by cooking, that's true by things drying, that's true by really anything, a sprinkler even, these types of things. If your interaction with the item is over before Shabbos starts, what happens later is really not your problem.
So you're not mixing or basting or...
Right.
Then the rules about keeping the oven on and taking it and opening the door. I mean...
Right. That's a little bit different. If you're opening the door, that's a complicated question. We'll get there. But open the door on Shabbos night, for example, there you're interacting with the oven, and the oven, the issue you're referring to is the oven then will go on, the oven will go off. You're interacting with something which may be prohibited.
Because Shabbos mode ovens are really not enough on Shabbos. They're for yantar.
Yes and no. We'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Okay, other questions, ladies? I mean, it's a great question. We can, like, spin all over Shabbos here. Yeah.
So if I designate my hammer that it's going to be a nutcracker, that's for me, right? But if Beth hasn't thought that that hammer is a nutcracker, if she comes to my house, she can't use it as a nutcracker.
Nope.
Right?
She can.
But so then how
can she? Can.
She can.
She can.
She can. C-A-N, yes.
Meaning,
you... Thank you for asking. Yeah, the item 5 was the owner calls the shots, meaning you have objective power over this item, which means for the whole world. Everyone in the world's interaction with that item is dependent on you. Now, if it's owned by two people, I guess more complicated, of course, but if it's, you know, most of our stuff is owned by us, owned by a couple, whatever, a family, so that person, couple, whatever, gets the right to decide what that object's status is. And everyone else follows suit. So that rock was not muksa for all of us, regardless of what, you know, my feelings about the rock are irrelevant. If someone took it and designated the doorstop, it's now a doorstop. So if you designate your hammer, someone comes over and wants to use that hammer, that's totally fine. Absolutely. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I thought the answer to that would be no. So then my question
is, follow up.
Not the toilet fee, because the toilet, I'm making and serving it to people, I can see how it would be.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just double checking real quick. So if you made the hammer a nutcracker, you can't use it as a hammer anymore. Is that right?
No, you could use it. It's a good question. You're talking about the mental designation and the flip-flopping.
Right.
You certainly can use it for more than one thing. Its status will be dependent on what its main use is. When I say you can't flip-flop, I mean you can't... like I said before, you can't say it's not muksa at all today and it's totally muksa tomorrow, and there's not really two things going on at once. You're just tricking the halacha, so to speak. You're just, for Shabbos, you're pretending it's not muksa. That's not, it has to be an item that's used for a permissible purpose, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, in order for you to justify saying it's not muksa on Shabbos. But you can have multiple purposes, yes.
So if you use it only for a nutcracker on Shabbos is over during the week, you could use it as a regular hammer.
You can. But again, if you know if during the week all it is a hammer, you can't go the next Shabbos and say it's a nutcracker. You can't change its use just because of the day. If you use it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday as both, then you've got, an item that's both, and then you have to ask yourself what's the main use.
So you're not really designating a purpose. So basically that rule means you have to, during the week, consider the hammer a hammer and a nutcracker use it on Shabbos.
Right. Either it's designated for permissible or it's both. And if the main use of both, again, the issue here, ladies, is with a hammer, is it A or is it B? Now, it's not going to be C, generally. Is it A or is it B? So if its only use or its predominant use is nutcracking, so then it's A. If its only use or predominant use is hammering, is nails, then it's going to be B.
That's why we couldn't use the fast on a bowl that he used as a bookmark and spend it on
him. Yeah, if it's either or, that's trickery. You can't, can't do that.
What does Chazara mean?
Chazara? In this?
You said that...
Oh, in the beginning, yes. That means review. It has other meanings we'll talk about later, but for now it means review. Yes, ma'am. I guess I am. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I specifically didn't use that example because it gets complicated. But now you brought it up, and let's face it, it is a very common issue. So yeah, there's several issues. Number one is many dryers these days do have a light. So obviously the light would need to be mitigated, but it has to be exactly disconnected, unplugged, unscrewed, whatever, just like your refrigerator. The bulb would have to be taken out before Shabbos. That's for sure. The question you're asking though is what about the status of the clothes itself? So from a Hilchos Muksa perspective, the clothes are not Muksa because it's the same thing, exact thing as the Tsholent. It was unusable before, but you set it up to change status on Shabbos by putting it on, turning it on before you light candles. So those clothes are not muksa. The real problem with the dryer, which is why I avoided it before, is a separate prohibition called shmas kol, which in English means making a racket, making noise on Shabbos that takes away from the ambiance of Shabbos is rabbinically prohibited. So that washing machines for sure, dryer, I guess depends on how noisy it is, dishwashers, a lot of appliances are prohibited to have run into Shabbos, and this is not a well-known halacha, but it's prohibited to have these types of things run into Shabbos. The Gemara's example was a millstone, a rechayim. I don't think most of us have those in our homes these days. But a noisy appliance would be prohibited to run into Shabbos for that reason. So it's a really separate reason. But theoretically, it doesn't make noise. It's not muksa.
So, like starting a dishwasher, and the cycle doesn't end before Shabbos.
Right. As long as there's no light.
You don't plan for it. It goes later than you should.
No, but turning it on means you're planning for it to cycle through and be done.
Right, I don't plan to open it.
So, as long as there's no lights involved, which is harder and harder these days with dishwashers, technology is making Shabbos more and more difficult. In some ways. So as long as there's no light issues and there's no noise, which a lot of dishwashers are moving.
What if the lights change while it's in the cycle?
No good.
If it's cycling through in lights, that's a good question I have to research.
Or the light comes on to say it's done.
So certainly if you open it, light goes off, all bets are off.
On the panel,
that's what I'm saying. If it says done, and then when you open the door, the light goes off.
Then you can't open it.
Then it's hands off. You can't touch it.
But
if lights are not, if you're interacting with the oven, with the dishwasher door, does not change any electricity, any of the, then, and it's quiet, then theoretically it's mutter. Yeah.
But if it's during the cycle and the lights change, you're not in control of that, so it's okay.
I don't think that's an issue. I can hear lots of postkim say, don't go there. But I don't think technically it's a problem.
Just one more question.
One more question. Yeah.
It may not.
It's a great question.
So if you have a bucket, and this is only because I really need to know this, if you have a bucket
that's
of
warm
water
for.
And Shabbos has started, you just lit the candles, the water's warm and you serve the food, and after you clean off the table, can you put that dirty silverware in that water?
That's a great question. You're talking like a bin that you filled before Shabbos.
Yeah, in your second sink.
You know, right.
No, you're putting it in your second sink and you don't want dirty dishes just to lay on the
right.
Floor.
No, that's actually a very good idea and the Sfarim even suggests that type of approach. The only issue there would be how hot is the water. And generally I think it's probably not that hot by the time you use it. It's an hour and a half, 2 hours later, it's usually not that. Meaning if it's over 115 degrees when you stick it in, then you got some issues.
But
if it's less than that, cold for sure is fine. If it's warm even, you know, like 100, you pour in really hot water, 130, 140, or even from the urn, And then 2 hours later, it's cooled. It's less than, you know, you can stick your hand in it comfortably. Then it's fine. You can put anything you want.
So then you can scrape the dishes and put them in there?
So now you're going to get another issue. Yeah, again, the short answer is if the... The other only other consideration here would be... No, certainly it's permissible to do the dishes on Shabbos as long as you either need those dishes or may need those dishes for another meal, or they're going to be smelly, or you just always do the dishes. You can't... This is a called hachana. This is a preparatory question. You can't ever do anything on Shabbos. Totally permissible act. But if that act is specifically designed as preparatory for after Shabbos, right, you clear the Shal Shittas table because you're having a get-together, Malav Malka, whatever, Saturday night, you can't clear the table. If you clear the table Shal Shittas, Shabbos afternoon, 5 o'clock, because you always clear the table, you just don't like a dirty table, that's perfectly fine. This is something I think people are very, very sensitive about, and no way, Jose, you got to leave everything on the table. It's really not true. If it all depends on your motivation. If your motivation in making the bed is because you like the room with a made bed, then you can make the bed. If you make the bed because you're going to use it that night, which I never understood, then...
You're a man.
Then you can't make the bed. But I think most of us, when we clean up, we just clean up because we like to have a clean space. So that's, you know, the dishes issue. You got a cooking issue, the hot water, which again is usually not that hot.
Right.
And then you got a preparation issue, which for most of us is not really going to be, you know, it just depends, you know, intellectually honest check with why are you doing it.
Or use paper plates and
be done. Or use paper plates and be done, right.
So there is two things. You call it the dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Car with a bucket full of water, no hot, just water.
Mm-hmm.
You just drop everything, soapy water, you mm-hmm. drop everything and you put it out.
That's fine.
Okay.
Yep. Perfectly fine.
Can you wash some dishes in a dishwasher?
Without turning the dishwasher on.
Without turning a light on.
If that's, again, if it's
at the end of every meal.
You know, a person then has to be, right, if it's something you normally do and that's where they go and you don't want them out and seen and all that, it's fine. If you're doing it so that it's going to be much easier Saturday night, you're going to go out and, you know, you don't have to worry about the dishes.
Can't do it.
So it very much depends on your intention. Okay, I do want to go on, ladies, and at least finish this page. And that is the exception to this general rule. We said that the status change that a person can create is generally before Shabbos. Before Shabbos, you as the owner have the ability and the right to designate the category of this item by mental designation, by typical use, by all the things that we just delineated. But there are cases where the status of something can change on Shabbos. The most important and salient example is when something breaks. You're holding something and it slips out of your hand and smash on the ground. So now you've got an issue. Before, you were holding it, so let's assume it was, let's say, a salad bowl or something like that. It was an egg. It was perfectly permissible to move. But now, you've got pieces. So the question is, what category or categories, it's going to depend really, does this thing find itself in? So, we have several cases here. A of this is going to be, if it's still usable, it's broken, it's not, the handle fell off a mug or something like that, but it's still perfectly usable, then it retains its original status. It's still an A. It's still an A. Because it's different. It's not, you wouldn't buy it that way necessarily, you wouldn't pay money for it, but the bottom line is, it's usable on Shabbos. So it had a permissible Shabbos use before you dropped it, and now it has a permissible Shabbos use after you dropped it. It does not change status at all. Its muksa status, it stays in A. That's, I hate to use letters in both ways, but that would be bullet point number one, that would be A of this, is if it's still usable, it's category A.
Still what? Sorry.
If it's still usable, then it's still category A. The second bullet point here, maybe we'll call them 1, 2, you know, avoid the letters. Number two of this is, if it's not usable at all, so again, you had a glass bowl or something, It's smashed on the ground. It's not usable at all. It is now a category. It's now muksa. It's going to be C. And it's not going to be C because it now has no permissible Shabbos use. It has no use at all. It may not even be a kli anymore. That would be a category C.
This is during Shabbos.
This is on Shabbos.
You wouldn't want to use
it. There's no, yeah, it has no real use.
Can you clean it up?
Ah, we'll get there. 1 second. Good question. Good question.
Still broken.
The third bullet point here is it's usable, but you want to save it to fix it. Now it's not in its original state. You want to save all the pieces, and you're going to fix it yourself. You're going to have someone else fix it, whatever. After Shabbos, you're going to use it. That also is a category C. Because you are particular. Even if it's usable, this is kind of a coming together of one and two. It is usable, but you are particular. You're not willing to use it. You know, the example I gave before of a mug where the handle fell off. Well, if you're not willing to use that mug for whatever reason because you want to fix it after Shabbos and you're not going to let anyone use it the way it is, then it's a C. Despite the fact that it's technically usable, but you are particular. You are particular. Going back to our definitions earlier, you are not willing to use it for permissible Shabbos use. So it remains it becomes rather a category C. It goes from A to a C. And then the fourth bullet, the fourth one here, but to address your question, the fourth bullet point here is, if something is dangerous, which will happen a lot, of course, in this particular example, if something is dangerous, then despite the fact it's a C, you are allowed and really obligated to move it. Right? The halacha mandates that we keep our environment safe and sound, so that if the glass bowl breaks, you do whatever needs to be done to get the glass bowl, the pieces now, out of the way, despite the fact they're not usable, despite the fact that we would label it a category C, and once it's out of the way, it is a C. I can't think of a real reason you want to move this stuff around willy-nilly, but it would be muksa. But there's a halachic dispensation, exactly. Practically speaking, you need to get the broom and the what do they call those guys? Dustpan, thank you. And you put it in the garbage or wherever it needs to go, and then it's muksa. Then it really does become muksa. That's true, but anything dangerous really on Shabbos, broken, not broken, we are all obligated to make sure that object is moved safe and sound. You see a penny on the floor and there's babies around. You take that penny, and we'll discuss there's better ways and less good ways to move it, but you get that penny out of the way. You can't leave that penny around where toddlers might be able to reach it. So, again, the four points under this, ladies, of during Shabbos, really we're talking about something that breaks. So if it's still usable after it breaks, it remains an A, or a B for that matter. Number two is if it's not usable at all, it becomes a C, and therefore muksa, you can't move it. The third point here is if you're saving it or protecting it to fix later, even though right now it may be usable, it's still a C because you're particular. Remember the translation of muksa means it's removed from your thinking, it's out of your mind. So this also is out of your mind. You're not using it. You're not planning on using it on Shabbos. And last but not least, number four of this is, if it's dangerous, despite the fact it's muksa, you're obligated to move it out of harm's way. Okay. Questions on that? Yes, ma'am.
But if it's not dangerous, but it's precious? Or indispensable?
Good question.
I have a question because when we went to a house for Shabbos, and one of the girls loves something called Invisalign, whatever. So we went to look for that, and I finished to move her around everywhere, garbage and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Someone said, "This is getting corner separation."
Okay, Bora, we'll have to get into that a little bit later. If something is valuable, does not make it muksa at all. No, something can be worth thousands of dollars, jewelry, for example, can be very, very expensive, sentimental, an heirloom, does not make it necessarily muksa. It's a great question, though. And this is something I struggle with, understanding the nuances of this halacha. If it's something that is I'm trying to think of a good example. If it's something that's designed to do something prohibited and you're particular about using it, it is an heirloom or whatever, then it is, of course, muksa. But if it is permissible to use, again, jewelry or something, which you're very particular about, then it's not muksa. So a retainer, dentures, all those types of things are not muksa. Yeah, we're going to be particular about them, don't want them ruined and destroyed and stepped on or whatever, but that doesn't make a muksa. Yeah, if they're designed to do something permissible, it's perfectly fine. Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, this is a tough one, so I apologize in advance, but with the spirit of Shabbos and Ahavas Yisrael and all that, I just think it's important to hear from a rabbi that every Jew is at a different level of observance and belief, and I'm just verifying that one Jew should not regard another Jew who doesn't know as much or not at that level yet, so to speak. And again, I apologize, like a Shabbos goy. It has happened. That's all I'll say, so that I'm just verifying your regard from one Jew to another.
That's a very good point. It goes without saying, clearly, that it is our obligation, thank God, that we're blessed with a deeper knowledge and a better appreciation for Hashem and His Torah and mitzvos, for us to share that with others. And you look at all the Svarim, the Rambam, etc., it's the biggest of mitzvos to reach out and to share that positively, warm feelings to other. Almost everyone in this room, including myself, came from a very different background than we find ourselves in now. And that comes because someone opened up and shared their Jewish experience with us. So that's basic, yes. It is unfortunate that we can never confuse Jews and Judaism. There will always be people who misrepresent what Judaism is all about and do cast a negative eye, etc. This, of course, speaks to the whole topic of setting standards and exposing ourselves and kids to behavior that may not be appropriate. God willing, we'll be in Yerushalayim, I'm sure, with twice the number and three times the number of ladies who come and learn Torah.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.